Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Breakthrough Directions. Each week, Breakthrough Directions explores the two faces of your business, outward through marketing and client delivery, and inward, your vision, profit model, systems, team, and you, so you can grow a business you love and live the life of your dreams. Welcome to the show.
Well, welcome everyone to another episode of Breakthrough Directions here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Gina Gaudio-Graves, the Dean and Founder of Directions University at directionsu.com, calling to you live this week from Bonita Springs, Florida, as I do each week on Tuesdays at noon Eastern. We have got an amazing show lined up for you guys today. It's one that Linda and I have been looking forward to for literally months. We have my co-host, Linda Feinholz, the founder of the Breakthrough Academy at breakthroughbydesign.com. Linda is calling to you live this week from Los Angeles, California. And I will let Linda do the honors of sharing with all of you who our wonderful guest is today.
I'm delighted to be talking to you from Los Angeles. And I'm going to give everybody a heads up, because before I introduce our guest, I just have to tell you that I have been living in, shall we say, the black hole of technology for the past week. Last week, my printer died, my site got hacked, my DVR died, my backup computer started to flame out, and today I'm using technology to be here with all of you, so I'm going to let all of you hold hands and sing kumbaya if I disappear off the line. Early warning.
Too funny.
So I'm hoping and praying that Chris Brogan is here with us. Oh, my Lord. Chris, are you with us?
I sure am. Can you hear me okay?
I can. Yay. Great. Now that I can live with faith that at least the two of you are online together, I'm going to let our audience know only a little bit about you, because I know how much is going to come through in this conversation itself. So for those of you who don't yet know Chris Brogan, he's the New York Times bestselling author of 4 books and more coming. He's a keynote speaker and now the head of an amazing company that provides online courses, most of which he has authored, as well as in-person speeches and learning. A lot of his emphasis is in this arena that we call social media and new media and expertise. But the heart of it is that it's all about helping people in organizations and people running organizations with the human business work of working better and being braver and telling bigger stories. And since, Gina, you and I are continuously looking for how do we help people understand this, the key to relationship building among people, between people, and with the business of their business. Chris, I am so glad that you're here with us today.
Well, so thrilled for you to have me. Thanks for letting me be on the show and make a mess of it.
Perfect. By the way, I have to share that I have been following your newsletter for quite some time, and what I love is the humor that's in every line of it, and the fact that you sort of play 52-card pickup with all the assumptions people live with now that, well, if you're talking to people in your audience, it has to be on Tuesday at 10 a.m. or Thursday at 3 p.m., and I love the fact that I get it every Sunday.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and what's really funny now is that a lot of people decided to switch their newsletter to Sunday, presuming that I knew what I was doing and like, oh, this must be the special day. But, you know, don't worry, I'll switch it back. I'll make it something like, you know, Monday at midnight or something.
Uh-huh. It's perfect. So how on earth did you start on this road to, I don't know what it is, transforming and inspiring people to think differently about business?
You know, it's sort of a long and weird road. I mean, my first grown-up jobs were in telephony. I worked for Ma Bell way back in the day. And then after I left the relative safety of the phone company and went and worked in a wireless telecom. And all along, I've really just always had this feeling of dissatisfaction with some of how we do our business in any of these cases, because there were just all these opportunities where we could be a lot more human and we could be a lot more, you know, how we'd want our mom to be treated kind of a feeling. And it's just quick and amazing how many times companies make that the least true statement. And further, just that they believe for some reason that just because it says on their placard or their mission statement that the customer is the most important thing, they think that covers that. Like just typing those words onto a mission statement will kind of manage all the rest of the problems that would come. And so I guess long before I had the power to do anything about it, I've really been sort of champing at the bit to be helpful. And then along the way, I mean, starting to read people like Tom Peters, for instance, in the 90s, who just really spurred me to believe that I could be the CEO of my own desk and then take over the universe. And along the way, what I've done is just I've built this kind of crazy circuitous career around helping first really big companies and now individuals as well as companies figure out how to do this kind of stuff. And I guess as all these new technologies come along, it's stunning to me how many people go, quick, how can we use this the most like a robot, as opposed to, quick, how can we use this to scale the hard parts so we can spend more time loving our customer? And I guess that's where I stand in it all.
I love it. I love it. You know, it's so interesting. I was in a call with a management team of one of my clients yesterday, and it the human stuff is the stuff that people, ironically, will put the most time and effort into figuring out how to dodge.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that, you're absolutely right, and it's stunning to me. I mean, in a lot of cases, you know, for instance, I would have a conversation with someone, let's say someone famous, and they would say to me, all right, but don't you just hand this over to somebody else? And I say, why would the part where you touch the people who are going to spend money with you be the part you'd most want to outsource? Like, that's the part, you know, that always threw me, is that you want to have the most contact with the people who pay your check. And I think that there's just so many examples of really large organizations caring in that way. And you know, that, because that's usually the excuse too. Well, you know, we're a big company. We don't have time for the details. But, you know, Bill Marriott is a great example of what it means if you actually treat every single detail and every single person in the organization as vitally important. And, I mean, they just have – they've had two-digit growth on dividends year over year over year since I don't know how long anymore. And to me, trying to show anybody from a solo business who says we're too small, there's only two of us here, to a huge corporation, what we can do with this medium to really make business flourish has been a passion of mine for the last decade or so.
And I suspect that you've had the same reaction I had in watching Zappos and Tony Hsieh, where, you know, when every single person that was doing customer service was given full permission, you talk as long as you need to talk and want to talk with the person on the other end of the phone. If that's 2 minutes, great. If that's 20 minutes, great. If that's 6 hours, carry on.
Well, and a lot of my upbringing comes to play on that, because I started in Mabel in the customer service space. And so, you know, it's sort of like once you're trained in that particular hammer, then everything looks like a customer service nail.
Uh-huh.
And, I would say that probably influences a little bit of how I come at things, is, you know, content and customer service can cure a lot of wounds. And I guess I learned early on that, you know, for every time you take that extra bit of time, it is going to amount to better revenue than rushing somebody off into a corner. So I don't know. That's the other part that people kind of get a little wrong, is they think that this is all kumbaya and flowers and kissing babies. But I love revenue, and revenue comes from people feeling like they're treated right.
Well, and it's what I call serving to the best of your ability while strategically monetizing. If you're only doing the first piece without the strategically monetizing, it becomes all kumbaya and money does not follow. You've got to have that magical combination of the two.
Oh, I totally agree. I mean, there's a lot of really loving people that still live in the mom's basement, or that have a cardboard sign out because they haven't really figured out how to make the money. But, you know, you're absolutely right that there has to be a business value in mind. You can't exactly give away the store. But, you know, it seems like there's such a pendulum, and it seems like most people are geared towards the opposite of giving away the store. And I guess I would just like to see the pendulum lean a little to the right of that.
So would I, Chris. So would I. So for the small mom and pop entrepreneur, the one solopreneur to, you know, 10 or 20 employee type of business, is how they do this drastically different than the way a Coca-Cola might do this?
Oh, but see, I mean, the beauty of Coca-Cola is that, you know, their cream cheese budget's bigger than most people's, you know, yearly revenue. So, you know, the little mom and pop has to figure out a little differently because Coke can have, you know, a command center put in or whatever. But at the end of the day, using these kinds of tools, I mean, what you're hoping to do is the digital channel allows for customer service type opportunities. It allows for marketing type opportunities and sales opportunities. And the one real trick in teaching anybody how to use these kinds of platforms is that you really have to distinguish which one you're dealing with at any given time and how to convert one to the other. For instance, somebody calls up saying, I'm really mad because I thought this thing was on Tuesday and it's on Wednesday. You know, a customer service person knows exactly how to say, I'm sorry. But a marketer or a salesperson might realize, oh, and here's an extra opportunity. Not only can I, you know, take care of the problem and, you know, refund you the money, but boy, have I got a great upcoming thing that might make you really happy. And so there's that kind of a challenge, especially in the mom and pops. But, you know, I tend to believe, especially in smaller businesses, I tend to believe that we're already used to wearing a lot of hats. So that's kind of, you know, built into the process. Where everyone flips out, though, is they think, I just don't have time. I can't possibly imagine.
Yeah.
Hanging out on Twitter or Facebook or anything like that. And the truth is there isn't enough time to just, quote, hang out on Twitter and Facebook. But there is time to connect with people who are asking questions and point them to the right resources and really kind of just keep, you know, touch with the flock. And, I mean, I see everybody from Richard Branson, who runs 400 companies handling his own stuff, to these two brothers up in Maine who run the Maine Brewing Company, and it's just a two-guy operation, and they're handling it. So I just really haven't found anyone yet who's exempt from it. My friend Glenda Watson Hyatt has only functional use of her one left thumb, and she can maintain a social presence. And I'm pretty sure that if Glenda has to tap it out one thumbprint at a time, you just really don't have many excuses left for why you can't find some time to get this done.
You know, people are mistaking the new technology as what's the right way to put it, the blue pill. You know, if I just master that technology, it's going to solve everything. And so often what they miss is the starting point of what is the relationship you want to have with your ideal customer, because that's how you're going to build a sustainable, profitable, successful business that lets you create the life of your dreams, make a difference in the world, and so on. And they're all too often they're stuck in the task level and the doing level. So when a new task comes along, like Twitter or Facebook or even, you know, Google Plus as a platform, they don't know how to fit it strategically into how they're thinking about their business. When you find yourself talking with organizations, how do you help them make sense of that?
Well, quite often I explain it all as I look at these tools as all part of one big giant chunk called the digital channel. And that is to say that they might have outdoor advertising, they might have direct mail advertising, they may or may not have newsletters and email marketing, which I steal and put in the digital channel. and then I look at, you know, all of those tools and I say, you know, it's sort of like having a great big set of Lego and you can do whatever you want, but if you don't start with what you want, then you know, you just have a big bucket full of Lego. So I usually ask, you know, what's a goal? So for instance, with certain car organization, we tried to figure out a way to fill their sales funnel a little bit, and that ended up being that test drives were a pretty good marker for sales. And so we ended up using a lot of the tools to get people in for more test drives. Another company, it was just they wanted to see how the digital channel could drive in-person face-to-face events, wherein which we could actually track the consumption of their product at that face-to-face event. And so what I did, you know, quite intensely at all of these junctures is try really hard to block and tackle the basic stuff, like how human is their website, how useful is their basic website, what's their email marketing look like, because these are the things that they've already have a budget for, and I just want to make sure that they've, you know, they're using that well first before they even bother with the frilly stuff. And then if they are going to venture out into these social platforms like Twitter or Google Plus or wherever, you know, why? And what are they hoping to get done? And who's actually going to handle it? And how does this actually map to their business flow? And so sometimes, I mean, it's been as simple as goodwill ambassador types. And that's probably my least pleasant version of this, because I love showing revenue, and goodwill obviously doesn't, you know, show a quick drive to revenue. But you can do, I mean, if there's already perception markers in place or customer service experience markers or something, we can fix that. We can reduce call handling time via call centers, which translates to real money for a business. So what I really try to do is I try to show how do these shiny new things line up with age-old business practices that we could do even if the power went out all over the world.
Right, and as business practices and business systems, whether they're online business systems or offline business systems, as I used to say to many of my clients years ago, you know, the company isn't actually running itself. The people in the company are running the company. So it's how does this make sense as activities for the business, for the workflow of the business, and how are the people the source of it, the source of doing it well, doing it engagingly with others, doing it compellingly. The system is merely the description of what's all the activity the humans are doing in the business.
Right, no question. And, you know, it's funny because there are always these little waves where people get all excited because XYZ thing is working and we need to clone it. Like, for instance, when Barack Obama won the election in 2008, like pretty much all of American politics said, oh, crap, we need this Twitter, Facebook something or other.
Because yep.
That's how he did it. Well, you know, you could say that's how he did it, or you could say he had a bigger war chest than the other candidate and he won, you know, based on raw economic fury, or that we were just ready for something different. You know, there's so many other reasons that wasn't Facebook that made that election true. But I will say, of the two U.S. senators running for the presidency in 2008, one kept calling my landline with a robotic answering machine voice telling me how much he hoped that he could have my vote. And the other one kept tweeting me and Facebooking me and asking me to ask all my social network friends to also vote for him. And I would say that, you know, the guy who won used that other strategy. So absolutely, describing the business process is utterly at the heart of this, because, I mean, especially, my gosh, back in 08 and 09 and stuff like that, the phone calls I would get were just kind of ridiculous in a lot of ways. It'd be the C-level person in like a pretty good-sized healthcare company saying to me, I'm told I need a blog. And I'd write, well, so why? What are we going to do with that? And where's your money? And, you know, why do you need that? And, you know, there's a lot of times I can always justify the case for these sorts of things, but I would much rather try to figure out what the culture and the systems, you know, are that are in place right now, and how can I augment or make something even vaguely easier. And, you know, sometimes the answer is you don't. Sometimes you don't need those new tools. But a lot of times I think as long as people are evaluating them, you know, from a point of knowledge as opposed to a point of fear. I mean, I was just addressing a whole room full of small business owners the other day, and I said, if your niece or nephew is the person running your digital experience right now, stop it. You know, you're trusting,
thank you so much, you know, for saying that to them.
you're trusting some big chunk of your brand to some blood relative because she uses the Facebooks.
Uh-huh.
You know, that is not, that's like saying, I own a telephone, so I'm a great telemarketer.
Uh-huh.
It's just not true. So, I mean, there's a lot of that. I mean, there's a lot of really polite kind of shoulder shaking to say you really have to come down off the ledge here and realize that these are just tools, just like typewriters and fax machines.
Yeah, and so often what's really missing is, and this goes back to my Avon and Disney days, which is that a new technology or a new something in the marketplace has come along and everybody feels like they have to jump on the bandwagon, and what they've forgotten to do is start with, who am I trying to serve? What am I trying to solve? And once I've answered those two things, now what's relevant, what's helpful to connect with those people, to build a relationship with those people, and to serve those people? And failing that, it's a lot of busy work.
Yeah, I mean, so here's one that's kind of interesting, is that Disney had – I've worked with Disney a few different times in the last few years on different projects, and it's clear that they're trying to figure out how social media plays in their world, and they have a really nice event called Social Media Moms, where they bring in a lot of, you know, influential mom blogger types and do a, you know, an in-park experience for them that also includes having weirdos like me talk to them about, you know, their own businesses and stuff like that. And it's clear that they're really trying to figure out, you know, in which ways should we use this. But the, one of the most visual and obvious ways is that in Disney Orlando, for instance, the in-park photographers, the Kodak-type photographers, of course, were getting no play. Like, could you imagine standing still for someone to take your photo nowadays, wherein, you know, everyone in your family, including the toddlers, have cell phones with, you know, cameras on them? So, you know, Disney recognized this, and they were like, oh, I don't know. So then what they did was they made it so that, you know, the fireworks at the end of the night now include this huge photo montage display of video and photos of your kids. So everyone goes to that. Everyone decides to buy prints. They try to get the night's footage and all that, and suddenly they're back in the game. None of that is social media, except that we use tools like Facebook to share those kinds of photos, which, of course, then gives lots more traction to people paying attention. So that's what we're looking for. I mean, that's kind of how the business has evolved even just in the last handful of years, is that even larger companies are making much more grown-up decisions with how they spend their money in it.
Right, and putting the time into thinking about the entire flow of the flow of steps to create the end result. And in economic terms, you know, as you were saying at the beginning, we all have to keep our eyes on what's the revenue for all of this. So, you know, just to expand on the Disney example, a piece of their revenue is people buying the photos or people buying the video recording of that final display with their kids' face in it and so on as a revenue generator. And somebody truly had to sit down and work the steps backwards and say, then how do we make it attractive for people, or actually really sought after for people to want to stand still and have their kid or themselves have their picture taken, knowing that in the end that means they're going to open their wallet and spend more money instead of just take the picture, you know, with their iPhone and so on.
Exactly so. And there's, you know, revenue in mind. And yeah. And sometimes there is some sort of long ball experience to this, because, you know, the same thing is, you know, one of the other problems that everyone's facing is that, you know, traditional media no longer makes as much sense to buy. I mean, the whole concept of having a the whole concept of having somebody you know, buy a newspaper ad or something like that, the economics are a lot more questionable. Buying local TV or radio, it's trickier now because that's just not where people are listening. So it's just a there's a little of that going on. There's a little free fall as, you know, we see numbers of people's usage of online go skyrocketing. You know, how do we get in front of the right screen? And people just really haven't solved that well. So there's a little of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I love
One thing that I know my people see all the time is, for them, even when they put the time into using social media, they haven't really figured out how it makes them money, which makes it a lot more challenging for them to spend the time. They really see it as they're spending money to do something that isn't getting them a return. What is it that the smaller business owners can do with social media that really can show them a return on that investment?
It really goes back to the last point that I started to make about local business, local media, which is to say that where everyone's getting it wrong, where a lot of small business owners are getting it wrong, is that they'll jump onto Twitter or Facebook and use it as a couponing system. And that's really just not how that tool works, just as well as if you went into a cocktail party and started handing out flyers for your pizza place, no one's going to care. They're going to throw them in the trash. But as we operate in these kinds of social environments, not unlike a cocktail party, if we have an interesting story to tell, or if we have something that's of real interest to the potential buyer, or we're covering a space that that buyer, you know, tends to operate in general, as media companies would, then we have the opportunity to take them from the social platform to a media platform of some kind, and then encourage a potential buy, and whatever that next step is. So where most small business owners are getting it wrong is they're like going into places like Twitter and saying, I don't know, I tweeted all day about 20% off sales at my business and nothing happened. And I'll say, yes, and you could also walk into a gym, swipe your card at the front and go look at all the weights and you're not going to be stronger. So the tools have to be used in a way that guides people to an interaction that they actually want. No one gets on Twitter going, boy, I can't wait to find a bargain. You know, they go on because they have some time that they want to, you know, find out what's going on in their community, or the people that they follow might have something interesting to read. We go on Facebook quite often just to look at pictures of our friends and family. So we don't you know, the stats on Facebook ads are fairly dismal, although some small business owners really love Facebook ads because they can really target to whom they go. And that somebody said that to me at an event fairly recently. He was just raving about how great the ad targeting was. And I said, let me ask you kind of a dumb question. You've talked to me all about the targeting. Have you made any money off of these ads? Like, has anyone said, I bought via Facebook? And he sort of looked at me a little sheepishly and he said, well, you know, a little. Well, that's great. I'm, you know, the most perfectly aimed gun in the world and you're shooting into the water, you know, good luck getting that fish, I guess. But so there's a lot of challenge to that. Where what I usually do is, you know, my method of mastering the digital channel would be to guide people to connect on these social channels, cover the space in some sort of way where you've built some sort of media that's of interest to them, be that an ebook or anything, and guide people from the social channel to that. And then within that product or within that kind of media property, there should be some sense of guidance to the actual sale that you're hoping to have. Doesn't have to be as heavy-handed as old-fashioned internet marketing has been in the past, but at least we understand the transaction a lot better. Is, you know, when we go buy a magazine, for instance, and we're, I don't know, let's say we're a runner and we're very interested in the running magazine. Well, when we see the ads on the side for Nike, we go, oh, those look really interesting because it's the context and we're in the market for that because we're already looking at a magazine about things like running. It's the same in these social platforms. The missing step most companies aren't using is thinking through what kind of possible media or other interesting information they could have on the way to the sale.
Right, so true. Yeah, I'm thinking back, I'll say 4 or 5 years ago when Twitter was just gaining its momentum. And if you went to Twitter and you started following people who were following people, what you found was all of the volume, all of the interaction was with the gurus who were teaching people how to use Twitter. So what happened was everybody sort of learned their Twitter muscles as if being online and having 500 things a day to say in 140 characters was really important, when in fact it was only important for a very small cohort of folks. And as you said a little while ago, it's how can you be present to be available to answer questions for people who have questions of you, which is very different than shoving coupons in people's faces. Very different exercise.
For instance, I was following a bunch of different magazine companies lately, and I was just trying to analyze their space and see how they use what they do. And they do what you might expect. They just put links to their ads over and over and over, links to their articles over and over and over again. And that's fine. That's driving attention to their site. And a lot of their sites are based on advertising volume, based on eyeballs. So, okay. I tried engaging about 26 different magazines and saying, hey, really like that article. That's really great. I would presume the next question, if I were a magazine company, would be, oh, are you a subscriber? Mm-hmm. And if I say no, oh, wouldn't you like to be? And, you know, to me, this is a really basic sales mechanism. Zero of all 26 magazines replied in any form or fashion.
Oh, my goodness.
Interestingly, if I addressed an author specifically of an article, then I'd get a response. But he was an author, so he didn't have any impetus to sell me the magazine. So I just think that it's amazing how much money is being left on the table. At the same time, we're worried that, you know, no one's making any revenue. And I just think that there's Twitter to me is like a money-making machine. Facebook, not so much. But in general, this whole digital space just still stands to be conquered by people who care, like Zappos and some of these other examples that we always name.
Yeah. It's interesting when I think about it, many, 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 many moons ago when I took marketing classes and everything was all about the five P's of marketing, I think part of what's taken place is that because technology is letting everybody, quote, connect easily, is people have skipped right over learning what the whole heart of marketing was about and the underpinnings of what you're trying to do with marketing activity, which is and At its best, it is getting your message and sharing your business's goals, solutions, reason for being in the marketplace so that people who want that kind of solution say, and you're the one I want providing that to me. And this dash, these really fast, explosive tidbits of perfectly clever lines nowadays aren't backed up with any of the thinking about, as you were just pointing out, how am I taking that message in order to move people deeper and differently into relationship with me, my business, my solutions, and so on, so that there's a value to the time being spent this way.
No question. I mean, I feel that a lot of the real basics, I mean, the Peppers and Rogers stuff, I mean, really, frankly, the David Ogilvy stuff has been far since lost in this flurry of gee whiz, shiny new. And I mean, this whole rise of, you know, location-based applications, for instance, like Foursquare and all that, and boy, this is going to really change everything. And then what everyone did with them is they just stuck a bunch of coupons on it. And it turns out, you know, some people love coupons, but your loyal buyer, I mean, the last thing they want to do is become mayor of the local Starbucks. They want to become, you know, somebody who, as you're walking through the door, the drink is half made. And,
right.
You know, these are just basics. I mean, what I love to tell people, I mean, my very favorite people that I work with, you know, for most times right now are baby boomers, you know, and I really enjoy that energy that baby boomers have, because what I keep running into are people saying, I really feel like I've got all this relevant stuff to say, and I feel like I'm surrounded by people telling me that I need to make Twitter videos and things like that, and have very, you know, I have to use 12 different tools to say it. And I love it because I feel like somebody just deprogramming a cult all day by saying, no, you're still really relevant and you really still have interesting stuff to say. And yes, you probably do need to use some digital tool, but we don't have to go crazy and we can do whatever one you like the most.
Yeah. You know, the past couple of months, Gene and I have both been spending a tremendous amount of time sharing with people Michael Masterson's book, Great Leads, and his discussion of the 5 levels of awareness. And that you really need to know where folks are in these levels of awareness, from completely unaware to their problem aware to their solution aware to product aware to literally most aware. Where's the deal? I already know I want an iPhone that's blue on the back and, you know, has the following things, apps already loaded on it. And if you don't understand levels of awareness, you're giving the wrong message. It doesn't matter whether you're on Twitter or you're in a magazine. You don't understand what the message is you're supposed to be trying to communicate to that reader or that that person who's just gotten that message. It's all busy work.
Exactly. It's busy work. And, you know, there's times, you know, for instance, I was driving into Boston to fly somewhere yesterday, and I drove by the TD Bank North Garden, which had this giant Budweiser ad on the side of the building for their new can, which they wanted to really point out was shaped a little bit more like a bow tie, which I guess is sort of like their logo. And I thought, wow, like this is a real lot of money to tell me we have bent the can that the product goes in. You know, it doesn't do anything. It's just shaped kind of funny. And I'm imagining who's patting whose back right now. I'm going, now that's going to really get them in there, Richard.
Right, you know, ad agency is saying, bent can, it looks different on the shelf. Bent can, you can hold it in your hand differently. Bent can, okay, it cost us how much in machine, you know, remachining our entire line for our distribution, and
right.
How are we creating value out of that?
and what did we really get different except for like a strange physical shape? Now, meanwhile, it's still in the consumer goods section. The people who run Taco Bell were kind of cringing at the fact that they were about to turn 50, you know, as an organization. And they were saying, you know, our demographic is 20-somethings. How do we stay, you know, connected to them? And so back in 2009, the senior team said, we need to develop a couple of new products and they have to be crazy. And it turns out the one that won was this idea of Doritos Loco Tacos, which is they take Doritos chips to make the shell on the outside. That thing has gone crazy. It's selling double-digit percentage growth in all of Taco Bell. Taco Bell is now calling it a platform because Doritos, I guess, has 123 flavors. And, you know, but what they sell, you know, this is the part that makes it different than the bent can, is they sell a taco that now tastes a bit like a Doritos chip. And I guess if you're, you know, in the market for tacos, you go, hooray, now I can have orange fingers while eating a taco. But, you know, but there's a change. There's a product change. And to your point, I mean, the 5 leads, all of this awareness, we are somehow throwing out the absolute basics of marketing and sales and business for fear of the future, wherein which you'd suddenly be like a Jedi Knight if you just use these neato future tools with your basic primary background, which is what you two teach all the time.
Yep. When you're in organizations, how much of what you're talking about with them is the business systems and business processes themselves?
Oh, me specifically, not much at all. I mean, I try to show how they connect to them, and I have that sort of background in, you know, from my wireless telecom days and all that. But I try really hard not to walk into the processes that would normally be run by, like, you know, the McKinsey's of the world and the like. I really try to stay on the edges of, this is how this connects to your sales funnel, this is how this connects to customer service, and this is how this connects to marketing. Only because, I mean, it just requires too many sentences where I have to sound like a grown-up, and I've pretty much given that up.
I love it. But I love the titles of your books. How on earth do you come up with these?
Oops, sorry. I hit mute by mistake. That's how. You know, usually there's probably a better title, and then something comes up that makes me think I'm very clever, and then I name it something that, you know, doesn't immediately make anyone choose to buy the book. I think that's pretty much the process I've used all along. So trust agents, you know, we coined this idea. We, you know, it was total luck and happenstance that the book did as well as it did, but trust became an utterly huge issue at 2009 when the book came out because of what was going on in the real estate crisis and the banking crisis and all that. So just by nature of the book having something to do with the word trust, everyone gravitated to it, made it a New York Times bestseller. We really, it was like a slow week when that book came out. And that's how we hit the Times. Social Media 101 was just a slam dunk. I mean, the book was kind of written out of old blog posts, and it's one of those kind of crappy books. But, you know, it tidied up nice and went okay. Google Plus for Business is just like an absolute down and dirty, you know, here's this app that I think is really neato and might be the future and you should get involved. And then the impact equation was me trying to be clever again. And then the other two books that I've written that I self-published via the Amazon platform were even crazier titles. So one's called It's Not About the Tights, which is an owner's manual in bravery. And then the other is Superheroes in the Basement, which is my book of not really poetry about nerds.
Yeah. Isn't modern business fabulous, where you get to decide what you want to say and figure out how to say it and get on with it?
Well, I mean, like I say, there's usually probably a better title that would actually make great sense. But what I've come to learn about great titles is that everyone forgets them. And at least people kind of remember my bad title, even if they don't know what the book's about. I mean, that's my favorite thing, is to listen to people when they don't think I'm listening, explain my stuff, because it's pretty, you know, what's trust agents? I don't know. I think it's about social media. And the book is not. I mean, it's the, like, last interesting thing about social media. So in the new book, Impact Equation, we dedicated an entire page. Like, we killed part of a rainforest just to write one page that said, ceci n'est pas un book about social media. This is not a book about social media. And yet, that's what people believe it to be.
Right. You know, we have a link up on the website with the show notes that anybody can use to follow and get to your site. It's bbdnow.com/human, which will take people to the site where you've got the courses and all the information. And I encourage everybody to go sign up for your newsletter. And you have this marvelous way of completely conversationally and playfully every week connecting me. You know, I spend my time telling people and teaching people and guiding people and mentoring people, and I'm looking for my own mentors, you know, the people who can break through my automatic way of showing up and thinking in the world, and your newsletter does it for me every single week. So thank you, and as the saying goes, carry on, please, you know, no matter which day of the week you release it.
One thing I'd like us to talk a little bit more about, you mentioned a word early on in the show, and that is story. And recently we had Deborah Stillman on the show talking about story selling. About 7 months ago, we had my good friend and associate, Simon Mainwaring, the number one best-selling author of We First. It's all about telling the story of the good your company does using social media. You mentioned stories as well. How do stories play out in everything we've been talking about? Because I know they really do play a big role.
And you might be muted again. or his Skype line may have died.
Do you see him in the dashboard?
Hold on a second. I'm glancing. Nope. He's gone. But wait, he will
I am sure he will be back.
So it's a perfect question, so please hang on to that perfect question.
I will absolutely ask that question all over again as soon as we get Chris back.
Exactly. The joys of technology.
And now I know he's really up in interesting that, it's really interesting that just a couple weeks ago we had Sarah Hill here who was talking about human media and what she's doing with Google Glass and Google Plus Hangouts and broadcasting the news with interaction with her people. And here we have yet another example of human media, right?
I know. It's an amazing convergence of people who have now spent not merely days or weeks, but now it's becoming years immersed in technology and losing the fact that the technology was originally every single, if you and I think about every single technology platform that we could profile, every one of them was created in order to create more connectedness between people and more relationship between people. And then what happens is everybody slides into focusing on the technology itself instead of the original intent for using it.
Absolutely.
So I think that's
perfect. Couldn't be more perfect timing-wise that the 13th and 14th, I'm doing a 1.5-day virtual workshop on social media and using it strategically.
Exactly, and bringing it back in through the whole purpose of it being creating relationship and connection.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's fabulous. Well, at the moment, Chris isn't back with us yet, so you know what? I would love it if you would tell people what's coming on that program that you're doing. 10 days
oh, my
from now.
Goodness. We did our first preview webinar yesterday morning, and that webinar was so powerful. I'm contemplating doing it again, recording it, and turning it into a standalone product. It was so incredible. Basically, the whole workshop is about figuring out first what your goals are for your business so that you can then better plan how you're going to use social media to get your message out. In the preview webinar, I'm showing folks how to use social media to find content that you can curate, turn into your own content by adding value to it, and put it out to the world in a way that doesn't just show up in one entry in search, but can literally show up as many as 36 times. And the entire process can take you under a half an hour, start to finish. And that's really what we're going to be doing over and over again the whole weekend workshop. It's a workshop, meaning we're not just doing a multi-speaker teaching you and talking at you type of event. It's a little bit of learning, a little bit of doing, a little bit of learning, a little bit of doing for the entire 1.5 days of the workshop. By the end of the workshop, you will have done a better job of getting your Facebook profile, your Facebook page, and a Facebook community put together. You will have done the same with Google Plus profiles, Google Plus pages, Google Plus communities, your LinkedIn profile, your Twitter profile. You will have experienced a Google Plus Hangout. I know I'm missing a few. Pinterest will be covered in great detail. And we're really going to talk a lot about how to create a few key messages, repurpose them into a variety of creative formats so that every person who finds your stuff finds it in the format that resonates most for them in a way that won't take you 10 or 12 hours a day to accomplish. To find out more about the workshop itself, folks can go to askggg.com/social call. askggg.com/social call. And to find out more about our next preview webinar, you can go to askggg.com/social preview FB for Facebook. Social preview, F like face, B like book.
I love the fact that you're doing that program because so many of the conversations over the past weeks, not only with the guests on our shows, have been talking about all these different shades of all the new digital platforms that have become available to people. And, you know, you and I will sit here in this context and talk about the need to keep coming back to relationship building, that everything in business starts with relationship. And I love the fact that in that weekend, people are going to be able, in fact, to take it in bite-sized pieces, but in really practical terms, say, here's the technology. What's the element of the relationship I'm trying to create that this particular technology serves me for, and what are the steps for starting to get it in place? But to keep pulling it back to the strategic side of it's about relationship.
Absolutely. And they'll really get an opportunity to experience how different the relationships can be across all these different platforms with lots of different kinds of messages. Until you see it and see the feedback that it gives you, it's really hard to figure out what to do in bigger scale to reach more people, isn't it?
It is. It is indeed. And I'm going to let you expand on that a little bit because I am going to connect with Chris, who says he's in the queue, but I'm not seeing him. So let me just find out what phone number he's calling in from.
That would be great. So you will get different results depending upon what platform you're using and how you're using it. If all you're doing is writing articles, posting them to your site, and letting that automatically post onto, say, a Facebook page or a Facebook profile, it doesn't really get people to engage with you at the same level. Just like in real life, in the offline world, people who really engage with you, there's an interaction going back and forth. It's a two-way conversation. And every entrepreneur needs to figure out how to make that two-way conversation happen using the platforms and social media that we have access to. And it's just a matter of taking a look at different ways of doing things to see for your audience, your message, your niche, what works best.
And I think we may have Chris back.
You do.
Yay.
Yay. So as we lost you, I had a fantastic question for you.
It's true.
And I actually heard the question about story. So you wanted to know about what I think of story.
Story gets used in the context of social media platforms, et cetera.
Right. Well, so humans, I mean, we all have different ways of consuming information, but we tend to use story as our basic unit of knowledge transfer. I mean, in almost all cases, we are told, you know what, don't ever pull that red button down again, because we used to have this guy who worked here and he did that and it shut off everything quite well, but then we couldn't get it on again for about 5 years. And that's all you really think, is that whole story boils down to don't pull that red button. But, you know, if we don't hear the story, then someone's going to just pull the red button again. It's just how it works. Story is how we conveyed where all the good hunting grounds were back in the way old days. I mean, it is a real basic building block of our survival, because prior to story, everyone had to really literally reinvent the wheel, because they'd be like, huh, if I walk into this cave full of saber-toothed tigers, I get killed. Well, if there's no story, then the next guy walks in too. And then eventually someone sees it at a distance, goes, you know what you shouldn't do is go into that cave full of saber-toothed tigers. And so story is our, you know, story is part of our genetic Darwinism. It helps us survive. And so when we somehow decide that we're grown-ups and we shouldn't do stories anymore is when we, like, pretty much put our mental senses one arm behind their back, because we've taken away a really simple way for us all to learn. And when I talk to people about telling bigger stories, which is kind of how we phrase it at Human Business Works, most times, so for instance, I talked to an organization and the guy sold water purification systems. And I said, you know, when I was looking at this in the 80s, the way people sold water purification systems back then was, if you don't have this, you're going to die. And, you know, you could take the two-hour presentation and show you how amazing the purification system was. But essentially they were saying, I can't believe you're ever going to let your kid drink water out of your house again without this $5,000 purification system. And strangely, at the same time, what a lot of government municipalities were doing was saying, no, the water's fine. Shut up. Don't worry about it. And so, you know, that sale doesn't work very well. So the news story had to become, think of all the money you'll save on soap. think of how much you could save on not having to buy bottled water anymore. At the grocery store, it's a savings kind of a story. If you pay attention to the story of cars, you know, for a long time were like how fast they were. And then there was like your mileage. And now it's what apps are in your car. I mean, prior to the iPhone, we never ever talked about our cell phones beyond how many minutes do you have? What's your coverage like? That was the only conversation. No one would ever ask the question, how many minutes you have on a plan, nor do they even know the coverage except to say it's horrible because there's not one carrier in the universe that actually has decent coverage, at least in the U.S. And I'll say mean things about Canada because I'm visiting here too. So the story is quite the, you know, the building block of all these other things we can do. And it's just amazing how many times people don't focus on the story of their buyer. You know, if you don't make your buyer the hero, then you're missing the biggest opportunity. And even if, you know, sometimes people, I'll say that and people are like, well, I do B2B. And I'll say, really? Because I didn't really ever know a B2B purchase that was ever somebody saying, you know what I'd like to do is look bad right now. So I think I'll buy this product. In business to business, the making the buyer the hero is making sure that, you know, you have good support and coverage for the product. You have a good longevity and plan. You've got, you know, all kinds of, you know, financial incentives to go with this organization over another. There's all this stuff that you bring back to the CEO that says, you know, these are the guys we're going to go with. And that is conveyed through stories as well as, you know, white papers and metrics and all that stuff. So to me, that it's just, especially when you get back to sort of smaller businesses, they forget to talk about the story. They forget to talk about why this matters. And strangely, at the same time, when you look at branding efforts, that's what anyone really only wants to talk about is the story that got us here. So there's a little bit of a disconnect in how one weaponizes their storytelling.
And I think part of it is also that so many people in small businesses go into the business because they have a passion for something. So it's what is termed push marketing rather than pull marketing, which is, yes, you have something you're passionate about, but did you go out and find out who wants something solved using your experience, your expertise, and your passion? Because now you're connected with them, you're in relationship with them, and they're going to tell you their story about what they want solved. That now becomes the story you get to use.
Well, exactly, exactly. And, you know, that's the iPod. They never went out and told you gigabytes and megabytes and whatever when Steve Jobs sold that. He said it fits 1,000 songs in your pocket. You can show up at a party and be the DJ because you'll have 1,000 songs in your pocket. And that was the easiest sale in the world. I'll be the DJ? Wow, I will be so cool at that next party. Now, you know, he didn't exactly add to that that you should probably have a taste in music and know what community that you live in wants to hear, but that's okay.
And also that it was in the era where your other choices were a giant boombox on your shoulder or a Sony Walkman, and that was it.
Right, right. And you know, if somebody else showed up with their, you know, milk crate full of CDs, then they weren't cool anymore. And so, you know, the other thing that I just find fascinating, just to totally diverge from what we're really talking about, is the fact that vinyl is back. You know, so
oh,
in
yeah.
the age where we could put like 100,000, you know, or a million songs with Spotify or whatever, I have any song I want, but everyone's back to vinyl. So now everyone's back to, you know, cool people, not us, but, you know, cool people like bring crates of records to their parties now and play on old fashioned turntables again.
Uh-huh. I love it. So when you think about what's next for you and your story, what is it that you're working on next in this world of human business?
So where I've come to find my biggest angle on passion is what I've been calling equipping the personal business revolution. And when I think about this, it's everything from tools like Square that Jack Dorsey came out with that, you know, a short while ago, the idea of you being a credit card merchant was pretty arduous and miserable. And now it's a goofy app on your iPhone or your iPad. And you can go to any flea market in America or any decent sized recurring yard sale, and you'll see people using the Square app. You know, a lot of coffee shops have it now too. And so I think these kinds of technologies that enable us to do business our way is an interesting story. I'm also interested in how many people have chosen not to fill a spot in a cubicle these days and why. And so I'm working on a book that'll be out in the spring about this whole concept. And I'm also really designing all of my courses and everything future facing around it. You know, if that is true, and if everyone wants to kind of run their job a different way, and even if they decide they want to stay at the cubicle, but they really want to be the CEO of their cubicle for the rest of their career, you know, what's it going to take? And what's the new business curriculum going to be? Because at the same time that people really need to know these basics, there's a lot of stuff that, you know, you can't go back to an old school university and learn. So, I mean, that's kind of your business as well, as helping really equip people. I've just chosen to, I think I've aimed mine just a tiny bit more on the people who aren't going to fit into a square peg, so that I can help the weirdos of the world actually weaponize and turn their goals and dreams into actual, you know, money-making businesses. And I, in no way do I mean, by the way, online businesses per se. I'm fascinated by the fact that there are artisan anchovy makers in Brooklyn, and that's kind of the people I think would be neato to play with.
Oh, I love it. I so agree. It's so cool to take people who have found a fascination with something and really show them you can turn it into a fabulous, lucrative business that gives you joy when you get out of bed in the morning.
Right. And in no case, I mean, does that relegate anybody to, you know, basement but still live in mom's basement kind of business? You know, I think it's I think there's some real choices being made now where people have opted not to plug into the larger system. And that story is becoming a little bit more recurrent. You know, for instance, authors. It's interesting now that I'm going to forget the guy's name, Hugh something or other, who wrote a book called Wool. He couldn't get anybody to buy his books, and he decided to self-publish, and he did really well for himself on the Amazon platform. And then somebody came along and gave him a pretty good deal, and then there was no financial reason for him to take the deal because he was up to making $125,000 a month.
Right.
On his own books. So,
right.
You know, there's another girl, Amanda Hawking, who did the same kind of a story. And there's just more and more times where the choice to go the traditional route of even the last 10 or so years is just less and less appealing to organizations. And yet we have to find some way to make this work into, you know, kind of a real live thriving economy. And that's going to mean understanding the interfaces and understanding how these old traditions have to merge with new approaches.
Yes, I had a fascinating conversation this weekend with a woman who has been an amazing yoga teacher and instructor, and she conceived of an idea for how to teach pre-reading skills to very young kids, and it's working. And she said, can I ask you a whole bunch of questions? So she started to ask me questions, and in among my answers to her, I said, well, you know, since you're really thinking about how to shape this as a business, and she paused and she looked at me and she said, oh, I hadn't even thought of that. And there's this amazing moment for someone who's got an idea or a passion where, well, it could be a habit or it could be gifts you give people at Christmas, but if you actually want to make the difference in the world and revolutionize reading for kids who are pre-reading age, we're talking about a business. Even if it's you licensing it to someone else, it's a business. And there's lots of little puzzle pieces to learn as your new skills and new systems to put in place to actually take it from an idea to something that could actually be out there making a difference in people's world.
Right. And I had the chance to talk to Chef Robert Gilbert, who runs I think he's the head chef for the whole Orlando part of Disney. And so he's got everything there from a five-star restaurant to even just sort of the food concepts of their simpler restaurants. And one of the parts of what Disney does down there is they teach small organizations how to interface with a big company like that. Because, mm-hmm. of course, it's not, you know, Robert doesn't like get in a car and drive to a farm stand and sniff every apple. It just wouldn't work on the scale of a big place like Disney. So I think that's another part of that is, I mean, similar to her, you know, figuring out that she's got this great system. How does one make it a big enough thing to distribute and turn into something large? And it's really funny how quickly we forget that a lot of things that we conceive of as big started out pretty normally. Like, you know, Mrs. Fields cookies was Debbie Fields happened to make a pretty decent cookie and take it around to friends when she was at these events. And someone said, you know, you should make a business. And, you know, all these big companies around us, a lot of them started from one person, one weirdo idea. So I guess let's just equip the weirdos for the next set of ideas.
Well, I look forward to figuring out how to help you equip all of the upcoming weirdos to really create amazing lives in a really diverse world filled with the results of people and their interests and their passions, creating livelihoods for themselves out of it. So I'm so delighted to have had you come spend this time with us today, and I look forward to people going to bbdnow.com/human and diving in to your newsletter and to your programs and everything else, and to being in touch with you to see how I can help you keep advancing it.
And
well,
if I can do anything,
so
just let me know.
Well, you've done it. You're out there shining a light on all these great things. So thank you for bringing such great stuff to light and for helping people develop. And thanks for both being able to use all those grown-up words to make people understand it better.
Thank you so much. Well, Linda and I will be back next week on Tuesday at noon Eastern for another episode of Breakthrough Directions here on Blog Talk Radio. Thanks again, Chris. It has been a great, fun hour. Thanks, Linda.
My pleasure. Thank you, Chris.
See you all next week.
Join us Tuesday at noon Eastern for the next episode of Breakthrough Directions, from relationship marketing to business success.